I'm Brian Russo, and welcome back to Coastal Connection. We're bringing you the stories of how our region lived through Hurricane Sandy, and learning the stories of coastal residents and their brush with one of the biggest storms to ever hit this region. We've heard from people who were caught in the worst parts of the storm as the floodwaters rose all around them, and we've spoken to the leaders and officials who pulled the trigger on evacuation efforts in order to keep the residents safe during the storm. But one of the more understated storylines is where all those people who evacuated went. Of course, I'm speaking about all the area's schools that were converted into emergency shelters, housing thousands of folks all over coastal Delaware and the eastern shore of Maryland and Virginia. We spoke with Claudia Nagel. She's the executive director of Diakonia, a shelter for homeless and needy folks here in Worcester County. Nagel spoke with Coastal Connections managing producer Tara Boyle about what happens when one of the region's most well-known shelters needs to evacuate too.
Once we heard that we were going to be in the path of the storm, we really worked to secure the buildings and prepare the people who stay here with us temporarily, our guests, to be ready in case we had to evacuate. And we ultimately did have to evacuate, but we also had to get the property secured and ready to keep it as safe as it could be during the storm and while we were away. When you're a family of 40, getting 40 people together and ready to move at a moment's notice, that's really kind of a daunting task. And to make that a little even more challenging, last week was the week that Contractors for a Cause, that's another local nonprofit, was here renovating our kitchen. So, that was a wonderful thing because the kitchen and dining area are really the portal to services for us. So they were renovating and had to really get that wrapped up because many of the contractors who were working on the project had to go and secure buildings.
So tell me a bit more about the evacuation.
The evacuation happened on Sunday, and the guests that were here, some of the children went to stay with grandparents, and the adults went to the Stephen Decatur High School, where the health department and departments of social services through the emergency management system had set up temporary shelters for folks in the community who were being displaced. And that's where our guests were sheltered on Sunday and on Monday. And then on Tuesday morning, we reopened for business, although our damage to the property, et cetera, was very minimal. There was a lot of water, a lot of water on the property. We had a tree that came down. Our neighbor came over with a chainsaw and helped cut it up. He cut it up. The guests stacked the wood to help get our parking lot cleared. But luckily, nothing was damaged when the tree fell.
Emotionally, how are people coping with this situation? Because I imagine for people who are living without a steady home to call their own and then to be evacuated again from the shelter that they were in must be just tremendously stressful for people.
It is. We know that homelessness or some people having to leave their homes and come into a shelter setting or the emergency housing setting is very traumatic to begin with. And then to lose that and have to be evacuated to another shelter can be very disrupting. So what we really did as part of the planning was to involve guests in the planning process and the getting ready process and talked about feelings, identified how that might feel, and encouraged people to talk about that. And so you knew what people were thinking, what they were feeling, and if somebody was feeling very stressed or anxious, it gave us an opportunity to talk with them one-on-one about that. But that involvement and that hands-on, getting ready, putting things away, getting things packed, that helps people to maintain that sense of control, just like it would for you or I.
That was Claudia Nagel, executive director of Diakonia. We turn now from people fleeing the massive storm to a man who charged right into it. Chris Clark is a staff photographer for the Coastal Point newspaper in Delaware, and he captured some tremendous photos of how Hurricane Sandy impacted our region. He spoke with me yesterday at the Park Recording Studio in Ocean City about the things he captured with his lens.
I had prepared the day before my car so I could be good to go for about 3 or 4 days. I had my tank full of gas. Every time I passed the gas station, I topped off 2 or 3 gallons at a time. I had 20 spare gallons of gas in the back of the car, heavy-duty shovel, a couple hundred feet of rope, dry clothes and wetsuits and life preservers and 3 or 4 days worth of food and water in the car. So I was pretty much a self-sustaining unit as far as that went. I was a little bit nervous with the state's restrictions on driving, but having a press pass, I thought that, as in the past, the governor would pull through for the press and the media, and he did. So fortunately, I had free rein. And for me, I was like a kid in a candy shop.
We speak about Fenwick Island. Fenwick Island is a very thin resort. I mean, there's not much to it. You can pretty much go on a good sprint and get from one side to the other without really losing too much lung capacity. You know, it doesn't have the seawall or as large of a dune system as Ocean City does, for instance. So when that coastal flooding and those surges started happening, Fenwick Island was really – things took a turn for the worse very quickly. Describe for me what you saw and some of the images you caught when things really started to get hairy in Fenwick Island.
They actually got hairy twice. The first time was right around 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday. That's when we saw our first high tide. The water in South Bethany at this point had started – and approached the tops of most of the bulkheads in that town. In Fenwick Island, it had already gone over the bulkheads, and it was in the streets. Fenwick Island happens to be the only municipality in the state of Delaware that's entirely within the floodplain. So when things happen, they happen bad, they happen quick, and typically we're the forgotten part of the state. The water rose even more dramatically. That 6 inches I described earlier now went up to about 2 feet. So 18 inches to 24 inches between like about 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock, all of the bayside was underwater. The bay was approaching Coastal Highway. There were numerous people that had contacted me through different types of media asking if the ocean had breached. Where was all this water coming from? And it was the bay pushing up. The ocean, fortunately, never breached in Fenwick Island.
I saw some amazing pictures. There's one I saw of the sign of Warren Station in Fenwick Island, that the water was so high it was almost to the base of the marquee, which I know is, you know, it's a good, you know, couple feet up there. As you were wading around literally in a wetsuit, holding your camera, taking shots, and again, you know, some of your pictures we're gonna put on our website for listeners to go and see. What was the most striking image that you shot or thing that you saw over the course of this entire storm?
Actually, I think you hit on it with the Warrens. And the reason being is I paid attention to the tides. When they started coming in for the next tidal push, which we really started to notice at about 8 or 9 p.m., we knew that this was going to be the bigger one or potentially the biggest one. And high tide was between 1 and 1:30 a.m. Monday morning. So that afternoon, I have numerous photos that are definitely very dramatic. The bay looks like the ocean. There's houses that you wonder how they're standing or how much longer they will be standing. But at 1 o'clock in the morning, Coastal Highway, Warren Station, it's a landmark. People know it. People come in and out of Ocean City and from the northern Delaware areas. I figured this is the easiest thing to capture, the best thing to capture without really putting my life in danger.
Was there any point where you felt like you were in personal danger?
No. And let me clarify, myself and my friends have spent a lot of time of our entire lives on this beach. We've seen lots of storms, not necessarily something of this magnitude with water depth, but stronger hurricanes in the past. I felt very prepared, but as a surfer and a boater all of my life, I know you don't mess with Mother Nature. And there are certain risks that you can and can't take. And I was trying to be as calculated with them and also trying to account for the fact that there are going to be things that happen that I don't know. So I wouldn't walk too close to where I knew the edge of bulkheads were. Mm-hmm. If I got within 6 feet, I stopped because I know if a rogue wave came, there's a good shot that I could get washed in, washed away. And there's nobody around to help you.
Right.
You call emergency services, they already have their hands full. So I didn't want to be one of those types of statistics.
Yeah. Well, I know at one point you decided to go off the island and you dropped the boat in the water and you went and you took the view from the ocean in or the bay in to land. Tell me how your view or the imagery that you saw once you did, because you're probably one of the only boats that were out there at the time, because I know that the waterways were essentially closed.
they were closed. And fortunately for me, I didn't find that out from the Coast Guard until after we had done what we had done. We were also in a boat that was extremely seaworthy. So it wasn't a little John boat or dinghy.
Right.
It was a 20-foot long Grady White, which is known for its stability. I was looking at photos on Facebook. I was seeing what people were capturing, and I like my photography work to be able to tell an entire story. And to do that in two dimensions is not always easy, especially when everybody has a camera these days, whether it's on their phone or what have you. I was looking for a different perspective. So it gave a completely different angle for people to be able to see what the storm did. And that gave me a better appreciation for some of the wrath that Mother Nature had dished out. There were boats scattered. People thought that they were secure with how they tied them off, with how they put them on boat lifts. There was all kinds of debris, trash cans, recycling bins, any kind of beach toy that you can imagine, lumber. You could open up a lumber yard driving up and down the streets right now. Siding that was ripped off of houses, the roofing. But again, not anything of the scale that's going on further north of us or has gone on, because we were spared the full brunt of this storm.
John Fager owns Fager's Island, one of the favorite summertime destinations for tourists and locals in Ocean City. His business took a big hit during the storm, losing the iconic gazebo that sits in the bay at the end of a long wooden walkway that stretches from Fager's famous bayfront deck. Thousands of people watched as the gazebo was swallowed whole by Hurricane Sandy via a webcam attached to the top of the restaurant. And Fager's Island is a perfect example of the role, both good and bad, that social media played during this epic storm. People all over the region and perhaps the country were monitoring posts and viewing pictures that were shared throughout the storm. But a few pictures were doctored or photoshopped, including one picture that showed Mr. Fager's Lighthouse Hotel, which also sits on the bay right next to Fager's Island, on fire. Hoax pictures like this were the black eye for social media's role during this storm. But in speaking with the soft-spoken and gentle-demeanored Fager in the aftermath of one of the worst storms he's ever seen, he's as positive as can be. They've reopened the inside portion of the restaurant, and he's leading the rebuild, like so many other businesses in Ocean City.
The amazing thing was that it just drifted in over here, which we were in the parking lot, and that's all the remnants of it. And one of the big features of that was the angel, you know, that was on top. So that angel just stayed on the roof, and the whole roof, sort of like the mast of a ship or whatever, just drifted in intact over here. Wow. So when we came in, and then I got out of here. So then at 5 o'clock in the morning, I didn't know what I would find when I came back in. And what I found was that this was all still here, which are our decks and our main parts, that the restaurant was still there, that the walls were still there, and that the angel had actually floated in over here and was just there, you know, completely intact. So we've rescued her, and she'll go back on top again.
What was going through your mind? And talk about that sense of relief when you found that most of everything was still here.
You know, I'm thinking that I'm going to come here and find basically the whole front of fine dining collapsed into the bay with furniture hanging out of the fracture and so on. The way that I viewed a lot of hotels on the boardwalk in the 1962 storm, where the whole front of the hotel was gone and you could just see right into the rooms. Yeah. And that's what I thought I was looking at, not to mention all of these decks that we're looking at right here that I felt would be gone.
Yeah.
So as I came up here, walked up this deck, basically I think it was about 5:30, and turned this corner and really saw that all the decks were still here, and then saw that fine dining and the columns were still there, I was so relieved and so grateful and so thankful that all the rest of this damage that you see around here seems like nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it seems insignificant, although it is significant, but in view of the whole overall picture, you know, I'm just full of gratitude.
Social media certainly played a big role in how people live through this storm. But one of the unfortunate aspects of it was that we got a lot of hoax pictures that were circulating through. And when you see any images of devastation, you're not sure which ones are real or fake. The reason I mention that is certainly as we look here and stand on the famous deck of all the Fager's deck parties, you look out in the distance, you see the lighthouse. The one hoax picture that has become kind of the talking point of the negative aspects of social media's impact in this storm, or role in this storm, was that doctored picture that showed that the lighthouse was on fire. When you saw that and you started to see posts from your employees and people in the town that were just horrified, What did you feel at that moment?
Well, you know, I took a good look at that photo when it came through. First of all, I hadn't gotten any alarms or anything, which I would have gotten, you know, from the city or from somebody. But if as you view that the smoke rising from that burning lighthouse was going straight up in the air, and the flames were going straight up in the air, and in the and I knew what the winds were, so. You could see right away that there was something wrong about that because that condition would not have existed. So then I made a couple of phone calls, and there were no reports of any fire at the lighthouse.
Was it hurtful, or did it anger you that somebody would take the time in such a tumultuous situation to do something like that?
Well, I don't know if it hurt me. I took it with a grain of salt. I found out later, though, my general manager of the hotels, Angela, who you know well, had practically a heart attack, and a number of other people who really the Lighthouse Club, Fager's Island, the Edge, and so on. It's more than a job to them. Mm-hmm. It's a family. It's a way of life. You know, it's these people are invested with blood, sweat, and tears. You know, the same as I am. Yeah. I felt, you know, later that I was a little bit angry about it just because of the impact that it had on them. To me, you know, I personally kind of a grain of salt and feel, you know, a little bit of sorrow for somebody who would kind of their mind would go in that direction or think that it's humorous, you know, to do something. But it certainly did spread like wildfire spread like a wildfire because it went all over the media in the middle of the night in a matter of like 15 minutes,
Where do you think this one ranks, and how important do you think it is for businesses like yours or throughout Ocean City to get back open and move forward?
Well, I think the town, you know, has set an example. The mayor, Rick Mahan, and the whole town crew, you know, his comment to me yesterday was that by the weekend, it'll look like it never happened. But ranking, you know, a question about ranking this, I have never seen anything like this on the Bayside ever. This outclassed any storm that's ever come through here, especially on the Bayside. Now, the Ocean Side, which I think Ocean City really missed the bullet on, the 1961, 62, whatever that was, that storm, which I was here just as a teenager cleaning up afterwards, just as part of the work crew, you know, digging out basements on the boardwalk and so on. Well, that storm would certainly do way more damage, you know, to the hotels, to the boardwalk, and to Ocean City. But in my lifetime, this is the worst storm I've seen.
That was John Fager, the owner of Fager's Island in Ocean City. Mr. Fager told me he has every intention of rebuilding the famous gazebo in the bay, and that angel they saved, it will go right back on top. It's interesting, too, that another town relic with religious significance survived Hurricane Sandy, and it was the awe-inspiring sand sculptures on the boardwalk in front of the Plymouth Plaza Hotel. Unfortunately, other structures in town were not so lucky, like the iconic Wicomico Street fishing pier, which was partially destroyed by Hurricane Sandy. But if you want to get away from constant storm coverage that's been coming at you from every angle and ease the stress you've undoubtedly been living with this past week, perhaps you should try this. That, of course, is the annual visual phenomenon that even one of the biggest storms in U.S. history couldn't cancel. The World Championship of Pumpkin Chunk. It'll take place this weekend in Delaware on Saturday and Sunday. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm Brian Russo. Sun on your skull, back to the light. Go pack your bags, take up the sight.